a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 183. Oh, goodness, ladies and gentlemen. I tell you what, I apologize for the rerun yesterday. I mean, yesterday was one of the worst days I've had in a really long time. It was like, Murphy's Law does not describe this day. It was like, it's like everything that I touched broke, fell over, burst into flames, and then sank into the swamp. It's like that scene from the Holy Grail, from Monty Python's Holy Grail, where he's like, the old man is telling the son, it's like, when I built this castle, they said I was in a swamp. They said I was daft, but I built it anyway. It sank into the swamp, but I built a second one. And that one sank into the swamp, but I built a third one. That one burned down, fell over, and sank into the swamp, but the fourth one stood. I mean, that is exactly where I was yesterday. Everything I touched burned down, fell over, sank into the swamp. It was amazing. So I come in yesterday morning. So this is week two of the intensive classes. So context, in case you're a new listener, my day job is running a cafe inside of a graduate school for theology. Normally a nice, sleepy little academic cafe. And we have 60, 70 extra people on campus right now, and they're all kind of trapped, you know, for breaks and stuff, and we're the source of everything. So it's like we run at about 4 to 5 times normal volume for these 2 weeks, right? So I'm here doing my thing. So I come in, all right, no big deal, got it going. I woke up in the middle of the night, kind of a good wake up, had a bunch of ideas about Calyx and this prototype I'm going to build. So wrote a bunch of ideas down, but I couldn't get back to sleep. So, you know, I'm on like maybe barely 4 hours sleep. So I come in, I go to test the grind, which is like, you know, how fine or how coarse the espresso needs to be is determines how fast it flows through. And you have to adjust that to get the right amount of beverage in the right amount of time, because that causes the right things to come out of this coffee and makes it taste correct. Right. And I put the portafilter in the group. Nothing would even come out. I was way off. So I tried to adjust it. It wouldn't adjust. So there's something wrong with the grinder, right? So in the middle of the morning rush, I'm pulling apart my primary grinder, trying to get it clean to put back together, try to figure out if there's a, the changing, the spring that does the mechanism is stuck or something, right? Nothing. And then I finally get it all done, get it clean, put it back together. It won't go back together. The little threads have finally worn out and it won't start onto the thread. So it's just stripped basically. I'm like, come on, man. No big deal. I have a backup grinder. So I start trying to dial in this big automatic grinder, this La Marzocco Swift grinder that kind of came with the used machine we bought when we opened, and we use it as a decaf grinder. I'm not a real big fan of super automatic stuff like that, but fine, let's set it up, right? So I cleaned it out real fast, ran some fresh grinder tabs to it, you know, to clean out any old coffee, and got it all cleaned out, started dialing in. It wouldn't hold a grind itself. I mean, just, oh my gosh. I'm like, really? Come on. Just one thing after another. I mean, scales not working and shutting off for no reason, getting stuck. I mean, my batch brewer, like a piece, the little shower head that holds up, which is regulates the computer, has a computer regulate how much water, fell off into the basket, overflowed the basket, overflowed the entire AirPod. I thought I left water that we preheated the AirPod in. So I dumped the whole thing out, dumped that in the trash, started over, realized what happened, then had to dig through the trash and hot coffee grounds to try to find this little plastic piece. Oh, and then the point of sale went south on us and it's not working correctly. So that was just like, yeah. And that is literally the short version of the story. It was just like, I mean, it just, Everything I reached for, I knocked over and it spilled. It was just like, it was like all day. I was like, I mean, the machines were revolting. I'm like, everything is falling over and breaking it down. It's like, okay, I'm not sure if this is Skynet or the devil. The machines are, is there like a Terminator that's also an exorcist? I mean, could we get like a robot priest from the future to come in and, you know, with Arnold Schwarzenegger's voice and be like, the power of Christ compels you, you know, I will be back to exorcise you. I mean, it's something I need something, an exorcist, a Terminator, anything. The machines are revolting. So yeah. So after a day of, my tech, attacking me, I was just done. And then I'm not even good. So much more annoying stuff happened. I couldn't anymore. So I finally went and got some Cuban food on the way home from my trip to a second Walmart to try to find a window air conditioner because mine broke in the heat wave. And then something happened. I was at this Cuban restaurant, little Cuba, getting like a little Sammy and fries here. And there's a Floyd's barbershop next door. Well, I normally go to Floyd's up on Broadway, but I haven't been to Floyd's in a while because I haven't been cutting my hair because my hair was getting very long and I was kind of growing it out again. And it was almost all pulling back and I had this big long head of hair. But I kind of work in a really corporate environment and you could tell people were kind of like, why is he growing his hair out? And it's just, I didn't plan on what's looking to be a summer of 90 plus degrees. And yeah, so I just, on the spur of the moment, I went, you know what? I'm kind of done with this. I walked in and I cut my hair. So I have really short hair now, like super short hair, like almost buzz cut short hair. So there you go. That's what happened yesterday. But it ended well when it was all said and done, hanging out on the porch with Perry West, a couple glasses of wine and a long conversation with Justin Schneer, drink. if you're playing the drinking game. And just got some good insight and advice from people and, just trying to figure out how to push the ball forward with all the things in this world that God has called me to do, this being one of them. So, so it's interesting. I heard a quote the other night. I was watching it. So have you seen Psalm, the documentary Psalm? So it's four guys, trying to get their master sommelier cred, which is like, you know, master wine steward, like you're a master of wine. It's an actual credential, you know, so a sommelier is a wine steward. And so they're trying to get, and there's like, you know, it's only like a little over 100 or so, and there's not a lot of them in the world. So it's a really hard test that people try multiple times to get past. Lots of blind tasting that you have to name all this stuff. And so they follow four guys, that were trying to get their master sommelier cred. Well, the documentary did really, really well, and it kind of went well outside the wine world and the culinary world, and everybody was interested in the Psalm thing. So they did a second one, and it's on Netflix now. Excuse me, and it's called Psalm Into the Bottle. And they talk about how wine is made and how, you know, the world of wine and the history of all that by telling 10 stories. And it is really fascinating stuff. It is really, really good. I am a giant fan of this documentary. And so I was watching it, and one of the winemakers was talking about aging and stuff, and he said, wine wants to turn into vinegar. And I never really thought about that. I mean, this is grape juice, and you've crushed it. I mean, leave grape juice out on the counter. It'll get moldy, right? I mean, it's so wine is the winemaking is a slowing and the guiding of the process of the death of juice. I think there's a metaphor there. No beauty happens without change. And in all these things that we experience that are not permanent, that are contingent, it is really the slow evolution of them kind of fully becoming what is their potential. But really, when it comes down to it, it's them falling apart And so when things start falling apart and going south, I tell myself, oh, this is just the process speeding up. This is what life is. It's like I was telling this to, shout out to Sarah Stacy, Sarah that works for me here. I was telling her about this and she said, yeah, I mean, if you feel like the universe is trying to kill you, it is. And that's true. That's what the universe is designed to do. Life in the universe is designed to kill you. Gravity, as we speak, is tearing you apart right now. You are being torn apart by gravity slowly right now. It's like, so all of this stuff that we think is so important and so permanent is the life is the slowing and the guiding of the process of all that stuff kind of falling apart and becoming something better than itself. And that's yesterday someone left the lid off the jar, so to speak, and the process just sped up a lot. Oh, I don't even know where I'm going with this, but it just, look, it's like wine wants to turn into vinegar. Things want to go south. We live in a fallen world. We're broken human beings. Family, businesses, projects, parishes, churches. They want to go south. They're trying to fall apart. Human community is trying to fall apart at all times. Everything is trying to fall apart. Our job is to guide it, to slow it down and catch it along the way where it's beautiful. So, yeah, there's my take on wine and bad days. All right, let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you on the other side.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so, you know, over 20 years ago, I started dreaming about this project, right? This thing that I now call Calyx. I started dreaming about a place. I mean, before that, it goes way back to when I was a kid. In these different models. And I've just been dreaming about this place and I've gotten distracted from it time and again. And I've focused recently mostly on consulting and like building other places for people and showing them the power of a place and trying to get people to understand what is possible with the power of place and the power of a context that endures over time. That people can kind of knit into their lives in daily life that isn't a specifically religious kind of institution like a church or something. And I've just recently just went, okay, all right, it's time to begin. It's just time to begin again. We got to start this. Let's just push reboot. Let's start. What were we working on? I just felt like I've gotten to, you got this end. Hey, I want some new tires. And then you go, okay, you know what? I should talk to so-and-so. He knows about tires. So now you have a means to an end. You call so-and-so, you know, this is like David Allen 101, right? And so then you call so-and-so and he's like, hey, you need to subscribe to this website because they have, really great reviews on tires. And so, okay, great. So you make a note. Now it's like read over these articles and then call me back and we'll talk about your tires. And So then you go to subscribe to that website to kind of watch some of these reviews and stuff and do so. And then it's like, you need to download the new version of Flash, Adobe Flash. Okay. So then you go, so now you're downloading Adobe Flash so that you can subscribe to this site so you can watch to read these articles so you can call this guy so you can go get some tires, right? because you're just trying to be responsible. You're trying to really make a good decision. You're going to spend a lot of money on some good tires. You want them to last. You need to learn about rotation and all that. So then you find out that, oh, you can't download Adobe Flash because your operating system is out of date. So you're going to have to upgrade to the new operating system. And then you're like, oh, okay. So you go and you start working on that. And you find out, oh, actually, your computer is so old that it won't handle the new operating system. So now, I mean, think about this. This is kind of far-fetched, but this kind of crap happens all the time, right? This is life, right? So now I need to, I'm back to like trying to save some money or trying to figure out my bills to open up some cash so I can buy a new computer so I can get the new operating system so I could download Flash, so I could join the site, so I can read these things, so I can talk to this guy, so I can go buy some damn tires, right? And all you want is some tires. But at some point, it's a couple weeks later, your tires are worn out and you're stressed out and trying to figure out how to buy a computer and you don't even remember that this is about tires anymore. You're on a means to 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 an end. And you're so many levels of means back that you've forgotten what the end is. Now, I don't know about you, friend, but I have that happen to me all the time. And in some way, that is the game, you know? You have to, the constant cutting away of all this other stuff and trying to remember what these things you're doing are for the sake of. Why did we build a school? Why did we start a parish? Why did I want to lose weight? Why did we get married in the first place? I mean, you have to remember, you know, the scripture, there's a place, I think it's in the book of Revelation where he's talking to this one church. I can't remember which one it is. And he says that he charges them with it. You've forgotten your first love, right? Scripture admonishes in one place to rejoice in the wife of your youth, right? And even if you're old, right? You have to remember what were you doing? Why did you do that? What did you feel? I mean, if your business is going to hell in a handbasket, your parish is dysfunctional, your marriage is falling apart, you have to ask yourself, why did we do this in the first place? What were we trying? What was the problem? And why did we think this was a solution? And what was the longing in our heart that this answered? And why did we feel called to do X, Y, and Z? I mean, you just have to do that. And I'm kind of going through that process myself right now. Now, that has opened up an interesting process. And that is trying to be bold, step out, and have faith when you've seen it not happen before. Now, why is that a problem? Because faith is an issue with me. Why is faith an issue with me? Because I was abused by the concept of faith. I spent 6 years as a non-denominational charismatic in a word of faith environment with this prosperity gospel, name it, claim it, all this Kenneth Copeland, Joel Osteen style BS. And they have so sullied the purpose behind and the means of believing and having faith and acting on faith that it turns into, you know, kind of a combination of like a liberation theology for the trailer park and, you know, kind of a Christian secularized weird version of that spooky new age stuff in The Secret with the law of attraction and all that stuff. Right. But there's some truth in it, right? There's some truth underneath it. Faith of a mustard seed, you know, all that, you know, acting on faith. I mean, there's something to that, believing and being willing to act, being willing to be vulnerable is part of the Christian life. And I'm just, you know, so much of my life as a Roman Catholic in the last 20 years has been the slow process of going outside and picking up all those babies that I threw out with the bathwater. And in the last year, and even just again recently, I've been kind of looking at the charismatic dimension of the church and spiritual gifts and that stuff. I've recently even more so been hammered with the idea that I just completely, not on a book level, not on a, like an idea level, but I had really, I'd been part of a movement that was just casting demons out of doorknobs all the time. And so I really kind of relegated the demonic and spiritual warfare and all that into kind of this spooky, weird, superstitious part of the faith. You know, something that people in non-Catholic weirdo churches do, or something that, you know, Catholics who are overly superstitious do. No, not in theory. If you'd ask me, I've did whole shows on this very show about the angelic nature, and I've talked about demons and stuff. But in reality, I didn't really pay attention to it. And I've even had this revelation before and talked about it on the show. I have said these exact words before. But it just recently, again, it just made me realize how things have happened, that I realize how important it is to remain diligent and realize that we are in the middle of a battlefield, right? Well, like that, like the charismatic gifts, like the daily interaction with the demonic and spiritual warfare, the concept of faith and stepping out in faith and believing and acting on belief, even when the circumstances don't seem like, you know, all that stuff, you know, that kind of thing has finally, I realize that I've had a bad, toxic theology of faith in my life, and instead of fixing it, I just stopped acting on faith. I stopped thinking about faith. I stopped believing in faith. I stopped having faith in God to have my back if I acted. Now, part of that is also because, you know, and this goes back to the demonic stuff, that I haven't talked a lot about the details of my life in the last couple of years in this area, but I mean, something happened that I realized that, I mean, it seemed like I had stepped out in faith a couple of times and really, really put myself out there and just got my head handed to me. And I had kind of chalked that up as like, that is just a childish, superstitious way to deal with the universe. That is a childish, superstitious, non-Christian way to think about making decisions and acting. In reality, I think I was in the middle of a battlefield and I was going, hey, I should go for a run. Get in shape, and I go for a run, and I get hit. You know, step on a landmine, get hit by a mortar shell, and I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. Running is a stupid way to get in shape. Look at the shape I'm in now. I'm all beat up, you know." Now, anybody with any brains would go, "Yeah, you ran through a minefield, but you've already kind of said, oh, come on. I mean, yes, there are such things as mines, but we really don't bump into them very often. I mean, come on. It's like, really, God, I just kind of have, I don't think you can walk around worried about mines. You just have to trust God. I mean, you know, I just, you know, but man, running just doesn't work. That's kind of what I did, you know. I know, not the sharpest pencil in the crayon box. Just recently, that's, I guess as I start stepping out, I'm about to file a nonprofit on my apostolate calyx. I'm about to start fundraising to try to cover a prototype. I want to build the space, build the place that I've been talking about and working on for 20 years. It's time to build one. It's time to show everyone what in the world I'm talking about, because no one seems to get it. And I think that if everyone could see what I would build, they would just go, oh, I get it. It's like a place that, oh, and people who are not Catholic at all, they come and they, oh, and you just talk about, oh, I get it. Yeah. They see it on paper and they act like they get it, but they don't get it. So yeah, faith. Whew, stepping out. Not easy. All right. So let's go to the break. We'll pick it up on the other side. You're listening to Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
And it's dark. Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, well, enough with the babies and bathwaters and demons and faith and all that. Oh, man. Oh, life is difficult. Faith, the life of faith, just trying to do something in this world other than just, you know, get a new truck every 3 years and watch a lot of TV on your satellite dish. I mean, if you try to do anything in this world, it's difficult. It's hard to get a new truck every 3 years. I could use a new truck. I don't even have a truck. I could use a new car for sure. So let's move on. Okay. So stop me if you've heard this one. So the Pope was on an airplane, right? And a reporter asked a question. It's like, I mean, it's like the start of a joke. So some reporters and a Pope are on an airplane, and the reporter said, but we know where this is going, right? It doesn't, let me tell you exactly what's going to happen. No matter what, if I hear this, a reporter asked the Pope a question on an airplane, I know exactly what's going to happen. He's going to say something in response. And then the entire world is not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. They're not going to wait to hear the full transcript. They're not going to wait until the full context comes out of what was said. They're all going to freak out. And then along ideological lines, and the far right's going to, the far right and the far left are going to agree completely on the correct hermeneutic, the correct key of interpretation of understanding what Pope Francis said, which is understanding how to read between the lines of what he said, usually, or the worst, the most extreme possible interpretation of his words. And the far right and the far left are going to agree on what he said. And the far left is going to say, he didn't go far enough, but it signals a change. And the far right's going to go, see, this guy is crying. Oh my gosh. Now, and they're going to freak out. So this happened, not surprisingly, again. So Pope's on a plane way back from Armenia. A reporter asked him a question and about homosexuality and about a cardinal that had said that we should apologize as the church to the people who are gay that we have dropped the ball on, that we haven't accompanied pastorally, that we haven't been there for, right? And the Pope, this one was spectacular, because the Pope responded, for the most part, by just quoting the catechism. He quoted the catechism about how these people are not supposed to be discriminated against. They're supposed to be loved, and they're supposed to be cared for, and we're supposed to accompany them pastorally and try to walk with them through this experience that they're having, and try to guide them towards an experience of the living God. That's what we're called to do. And we haven't been very good at it. So for dropping the ball and not doing what the catechism says the church should be doing, we could apologize. The whole world just lost its crap. It just freaked out. Again, the far right. And I have friends in this boat. And I asked him. He quoted the catechism. He said, well, selectively. There's a lot in the catechism about the homosexuality he didn't say. You mean all that stuff that he said about the nature of marriage, the nature of complementarity, the nature of family, all that other stuff about homosexuality and all that stuff that is the church teaches, that he has said time and time again, that he's written in documents, all of that stuff. Yeah, but I mean, they gave him the mic and he didn't say anything. And then the far left is like, well, this signals a change. I mean, it's another change in tone, but it doesn't go far enough. The church needs to do more than apologize. So they both admit that he's like signaling some kind of change, that maybe homosexuality isn't wrong and it's all okay. And one side says that's not far enough, and the other side says it's too far. But it isn't what he said. It's not. He just didn't say that. The man quoted the catechism in response to a question about whether or not there's any aspect of our relationship with this group of people that we should maybe kind of repent over. And so he talked about the part that we should repent over, not the part that we shouldn't repent over, because that wasn't the question asked. Anyway, I keep telling myself I'm not going to come out every time that the Pope says something and people freak out and rip on everyone. But that hasn't stopped me so far. But here's the thing is that the left, I don't care. They're just idiots. They're just looking for some kind of recognition of their position from a place that's never going to recognize their position. We're never going to do that. It's just not true, and we're dedicated to truth, and we're just not going to do that. But the people on the right, the far right, this time around it was like not even just the far right. Yeah, the lovely and talented Antoinette Golish is making faces at me through the studio window. She'll do anything to get a mention on the show. And so it drives me absolutely nuts. So there are these people in the church who think that here's what it comes down to. They think that Catholicism, the faith, is a set of propositions that you assent to. It is a deposit of assertions. And to be Catholic is to assent to those assertions. That is the definition of being a good Catholic, is how far do you assent to these assertions? And they're mostly sexual, moral, or having to do with some hot button cultural issue. You know, occasionally they'll be like dogmatic in some kind of obscure kind of aspect. But for the most part, what makes you a good Catholic is that you're pro-life, and that you are dedicated to the fact that murdering a child is a completely different kind of thing and completely worse than murdering anyone else or starving anyone else or doing anything else. And that one has to be talked about at all times in any other kind of murder, especially like with war or starvation from poverty or anything that could be termed under the social doctrine of the church. That you don't talk about that because when you're talking about that, you're not talking about abortion, and it's all about abortion, or it's all about homosexuals are wrong. And in this view of the world, the Pope has a job. And the job of the Pope is to, in these people's eyes, is to correct the world. To correct the world on behalf of the church. To correct the world for the sake of the church, or on behalf of the church. You know, he's the arm of the church that corrects the world and says, you're wrong and bad, and you're not a good person, and you're going to hell in a handbasket because you're gay or because you had an abortion or something. Now, I'm not saying that homosexuality is right. I'm not saying it's allowable. I'm not saying that if you choose it freely, it's not sin. I'm sure as hell not saying that abortion's okay. Abortion is disgusting. I'm going to rant about this this situation in Texas next, most likely. But it's like the Pope, who's had a lot of choice words against abortion, said that we cannot be defined by some kind of opposition. We are not an anti-abortion church. We are a pro-life church. But being pro-life and anti-abortion are not the same thing, right? If any, it's just a matter of means and ends to a great extent. It's like you have to be pro-life, but that's going to have a bigger ramification than just this one incitation in abortion. And it's going to affect how you look at people and how you treat people, even bad people, even people that are having abortions, hell, even people that are providing abortions. You're going to look at them differently if you are truly pro-life than you are if you're just, this is your agenda and your agenda is anti this bad thing, right? Which is a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a good thing. It's a horrible thing. It's freaking disgusting. It's terrible. It's like sacrificing children to Baal or something. But so this view of the world, this view of the Pope's job in the world, that we have to, the Pope's job is to correct the world on behalf of the people in the church. Here, the church needs to correct the world and tell them they're wrong. And the Pope's job, no matter when he gets the mic, is to correct the world on behalf of the church. That ain't this guy. That is not how he views it. That is not how he's acting, and it's not ever going to be how he's acting. So you can just exhale. But the thing is that he does that sometimes, and no one talks about it. And there are a lot of times when John Paul II and Ratzinger and Benedict XVI acted in a very similar way. But no one talks about that. They just find these places where they were very hardcore and very clear and very confrontational with the culture of the world about these issues. And they quote those, right? So for some reason, we have decided that we're just going to take a different tack on this particular pope. And we're basically going to believe whatever HuffPo says. HuffPo is the official... HuffPo is the new La Osservatore Romano. It is the new official interpreter of what the Pope said. If you want to know what the Pope said, go to Ariane Huffington's site. That's where we find our information at, and we believe it dogmatically. And so these people aren't a fan. And they usually want to throw up Benedict XVI as the people that the person they are a fan of. And there's a great irony in that, because we're going to talk about that here when we get back in a second. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. Oh, I'm lovely.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. So, we were talking about these people that give the worst possible interpretation to anything that Pope Francis says, that are just absolutely freaking out on Pope Francis constantly and talking about, and they just all pine and long for the good old days. When we had a real conservative pope that would take on the world, because that guy's good. Benedict XVI, which if you listen to this show at all, you know that I adore Benedict XVI. And I adore Joseph Ratzinger. I think that Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI, is the most intelligent, most educated, most cultured human being sucking air on the earth right now. Okay, so don't get me wrong. I'm a fan. And I became an even bigger fan yesterday because there was a ceremony and our Pope Emeritus, Benedict XVI, was there, as was the current Holy Father, Pope Francis, and the former addressed the latter. And things got interesting. They got really interesting. You can find the video of this online if you poke around. we find the best quote. He said... this is Benedict XVI referring to talking to Pope Francis, which is fascinating because he's taken on Pope Francis's favorite mode of communication, which is off the cuff, no notes, just like talking, right? And he says, thank you, Holy Father, for your goodness, which from the first moment of your election has struck every day of my life. And he says, what was it? What was the big quote that I liked so much? Let me go back to the different article here. Come on. I hate whenever I make a mistake and don't have something said. Well, anyway, he said that, here it is. Where is the, come on, load. He says, your goodness is a place in which I feel protected. And he invited him to move forward with all of us on the path of divine mercy, showing Jesus' path to God. And it was just beautiful. They're just having, hey, watch the video. There's like, there's a clear affection between these two. Benedict XVI gets Pope Francis. All the people that keep pitting Benedict XVI against Pope Francis don't get Pope Francis. And it's like, you know, I remember being at Thomas Aquinas College, and we read Eterni Patris, which is a papal writing, and it's the writing that really just, you know, sets out what it means to it sets out St. Thomas Aquinas as kind of like the guide for, you know, Catholic education, Catholic philosophy, the intellectual life, and all that. And John Paul II of Fides Oratio reads that a certain way. Other people read it differently, right? So I'm sitting in class, and I'm strangely quiet, as you notice. I'm not usually quiet, but especially it would be really bad if I were quiet on a radio show, because then it's to be dead air, right? But I'm uncharacteristically silent in seminar, and the blessed Dr. Richard Ferrier looks over at me and says, "Whaley, you're being strangely quiet tonight. What do you think about this?" I said, "Well, sir, I think that there are two ways to be a fan of the Grateful Dead." And half of the class exploded in laughter. The other half started objecting that this had nothing to do with St. Thomas Aquinas or the document we're reading. And Ferrier starts laughing. He says, no, I'll allow it. I want to see where you're going with this. And I'm like, well, here you have this band, right? The Grateful Dead. Like them or not, they're really unique, really interesting. And the reason they're so interesting is that Jerry and these guys, they listen to everything under the sun, right? I mean, they really have a serious musical wonder. I mean, country, blues, gospel, bluegrass, southern rock, every jazz, everything you can get your hands on, these people listen to. And they put it all together in this big, beautiful system called the Grateful Dead. And then you have deadheads who listen to nothing but the Grateful Dead. So by this point, Ferrier saw where I was going and started cracking up, right? And I'm like, so who's the better fan? Who's the one that loves Jerry Garcia more? The one that does what he does and listens to everything under the sun and then creates their own musical kind of like mashup genre based on it? Or the people who just go, well, that was okay until he did it. Now he's done the perfection and we're just going to listen to nothing but the Grateful Dead over and over and over and over again. And I think that's the case with some people, with St. Thomas and with Thomas, with certain kinds of Thomas, where they think that to be a good student of St. Thomas is to just read him and look to his answer for everything under the sun. And then it seems like if you read Fides Oratio and you read the way Carol Wojtyla, where John Paul II, the way he reads Eterni Patris, you see that he thinks that to be a true student of St. Thomas, a true disciple of St. Thomas, is to do what Thomas did. So you're going to read Thomas. If Thomas wasn't Thomas, he would have read Thomas. You're going to read Thomas. And you're also going to read everything else you can get your hands on, and you're going to sift, like St. Paul said, you're going to sift everything and keep what is true, right? Well, I think that there's something going on like that with Ratzinger. It seems like, I remember when I started reading Joseph Ratzinger, I had never really read him much. I'd been so obsessed with John Paul II, and I was so bummed when he died, and I had so much still to read. And I started reading Ratzinger, and I was just blown away. And I would send these emails to one of my mentors, and I would be like, did they read him? And he's like, no, they didn't read him. Just he wore the red shoes, made it easier to have Latin masses, so all the trads love him. But I mean, have you actually read, I'm speaking to my traddy friends out there. Have you actually read Joseph Ratzinger? Have you read Benedict the 16th? Have you read Ratzinger? Have you go read Introduction to Christianity. Go read some of these beautiful things he's written. He's not this close-minded culture warrior that you're trying to make him out to be. And he clearly gets it because he's just like full-on endorsed Pope Francis and his papacy with mad love in public with the world watching. Because there's no contradiction there. Unless you were not paying attention to what Ratzinger was doing in the first place. Unless you don't really understand what he's about. Right? And so I would challenge you to go really engage this man. Engage that thinker. Look at him. See past just the fact that he liked a few of the trappings you like, and he helped out a particular liturgical cause that you have. Maybe there's a bigger picture going on. He did, if you'll remember right, start a journal called Communio with Hans Urs von Balthasar,
right?
He was friends. He was in that movement, right? I think the guy is incredible, and I think he gets Pope Francis. I think Pope Francis is incredible. And I'm not saying that hasn't made missteps. He hasn't misspoke or something. He's admitted to something that he has. He's human. We've just gotten used to this mode of engagement where the Pope's job is to correct the world on behalf of the church. And the only way that he can do that is using dogmatic, academic, theological language. And that just ain't this guy. But I think that, whenever Cardinal Burke came to the defense of Pope Francis on another one of these things recently, some of you full-on tratty bloggers like threw Burke under the bus. Well, there you go. I'm throwing down a gauntlet. I'm challenging you. Are you going to throw Ratzinger under the bus now too? Are you going to throw Joseph Ratzinger under the bus? Has he gone senile? Did the Vatican people get to him, and do they have his niece in a room someplace tied to a chair or something? Why would Joseph Ratzinger just full on throw mad love at the papacy of Francis? Maybe, just maybe, you could have a moment of metanoia. Just maybe you could have a moment of just humility and go, maybe I don't understand what's going on. Maybe I am living through the lens of an ideology, and maybe these people, JP2, Joseph Ratzinger, Benedict XVI, Pope Francis, and before that, Jorge Bergoglio, go read the chapter on man in the book, A Generative Thought. It's about the religious sense of Monsignor Luigi Giussani, written by Jorge Bergoglio. Go read that. Maybe, just maybe, these men are calling us to a raw engagement with reality, an encounter with reality in the divine. Maybe that's what they're calling us to. I think Ratzinger joins a long list of people in like Elvis, Jesus, people who I love their work, but their fans really, really get on my nerves. All right, well, that's what I got today. Rant and muse, like always. So try to get you a show each day this week. Super busy, crazy day job week. We'll see what happens. Thanks for coming out. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. See you next time.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.